Craig Wilkinson, and just very excited to be again with you on this journey of becoming dangerous but good. We're talking about how you can be the most competent, effective, powerful, most influential person you can possibly be. How can you use that to become a force for good? In other words, dangerous for good. Every one of us has enormous potential, way more than we actually believe we do. But very few people actually realize that potential and become the force for good that they were designed to be. I'm very excited today to be joined by a friend, brother, colleague, mentor, all-around larger-than-life character, Billy Selekani. The one thing I always say about Billy is he always makes all of us feel underdressed. Wherever he goes, Billy, yeah, you can go to a bra and Billy's got a tie, man. All of us are feeling. But Billy's a great friend. Africa's most accomplished and rewarded and accoladed speaker, author, and a tremendous story. The book he wrote, one of the books he wrote, Barefoot to
from,
Snakes.
From Barefoot to Snakes.
Snakes is fantastic. So, Billy, fantastic to be here. And I mean, just to set the tone, we talk about two things here. You know, one is how to become the most powerful, effective, influential, skillful person that you can possibly be, which you've done in bucket loads. And secondly, how to use that to be a force for good. So, welcome, man, and thank you for
joining us. Thank you very much. Thank you for having me, Craig. I think it's an honor and a privilege to always share these amazing moments with you because I always say that we grow as far as the nearest people we hang around with.
Right.
So, you know, iron has to consistently sharpen iron.
Fantastic, And what's great about our generation, and I put us in the same generation, I hope you don't mind.
No, we are. We definitely are in the same generation.
is that many of us did not have that many good male role models. And therefore we become peer mentors, you know? You mentor me, I mentor you. You know what I mean?
Absolutely,
we learn from each other. And that's a beautiful thing about brothers walking together.
Absolutely.
But Billy, I mean you've done a lot of work on personal mastery and growth. And you know, just please share with us around, you know, how you can become and I mean you've definitely done it, the most powerful, effective, influential person you can possibly be. Realize your potential.
Yeah. Well, you know, Craig, I've always said my thing about life is intentionality. It's living a life of intention. Because if you're not intentional, you're accidental. You know, everything happens. You hope by luck, by grace, things will happen.
And
unfortunately, it's by default. And I was saying to a young man yesterday, it's amazing how most people live in a specific world, but their lives are very ambiguous.
Right.
Like, you drive a specific car.
Yes.
You drink a specific coffee. Mm-hmm. You wear a specific kind of attire, but your life is not specific.
In other words, you don't really know where you're going.
Exactly. Yeah. You're hoping and you're wishing. And I said to people, you know, any building has a blueprint. If anything goes bad, the first thing that the first responders are going to ask for is where's the blueprint of the building, so that they can understand where the dangers are. But most people don't have a blueprint for their lives.
Powerful.
So they wake up every morning hoping and wishing that things would happen. And I've been there for a very long time in my life. But for me, it's when the pressures of life were just too much, this intentionality question became something that bothered me. And you know, I would sit in Tembisa and I would look at my life and I'd think, why am I here? You know, why, you know, and why?
What's it all about?
What is it about? Why am I feeling such pain? Why is nothing happening in my life? Why is life such a drag? Waking up in the morning is like a painful process. Until I understood the fact that I needed to become intentional about my life, you know, and when that happened, when I had this epiphany and this awakening, then the biggest and the toughest thing was, how do I then become intentional?
Right.
Waking up to the fact of intentionality is another thing, but then you need the how.
Right.
And then, of course, books and books and books and books. Mm-hmm. You know, that's where I went.
Right.
I buried myself in the search of this, of wisdom and knowledge and trying to find out how other men and women became intentional about their lives. Because, you know, I say human beings will learn through modeling.
Yep.
A kid learns how to walk because they've seen you walk.
Right.
You know, a baby is very young and very small. They've got no clue what words mean, whatever. They observe your behavior and they emulate your behavior.
Right.
And that's modeling. And I wanted to study successful men and women and copy their behavior.
Fantastic.
You know, and what do they eat? Do they gym? You know, who do they hang out with? What books do they read?
Yes.
You know, and all those little things that I started picking up. And it becomes difficult because you also have to be careful not to be lost in the process of learning, and then you end up losing your own authentic identity, and now I'm trying to become like Craig.
Right. So you copy too much, you know. You lose your individuality.
You've got to always, you know, I always make this joke, and people say, people say Nelson Mandela was an amazing guy. I said, yes, I loved little pieces of his life, but not most of his life. Right. I don't want to get married 3 times. I would want to go to jail for 27 years. But, you know, the little pieces of his life really inspire me. So that's for me, that's the power of modeling.
So you cherry pick. You pick what works.
Yeah, because there are things about great men and women that you will not resonate with.
Right.
You know, and I mean...
No one's perfect.
Nobody's perfect. And give yourself that grace too, that you're never going to reach perfection, but you're going to get to a place where you get to this place of not wanting for more, because you're now operating in a space of gratitude.
Right.
Because when you operate in a space of gratitude, you cannot want for more, you know. And for me, that has always been, you know, how do I become intentional about my life? You know, how do I make sure that everywhere I go, I can impact at least one person? And I always say, when I get into audiences that I speak at, it's a very powerful psychological trick. I say, I'm here for one person. I don't know who that person is. And suddenly you raise the expectation of learning.
So everyone wants to be the one.
Yeah. So it's like amazing.
Maybe it's me.
Maybe it's me. And suddenly their level of commitment to wanting to learn grows. You know, and that's just, it's a beautiful thing.
But I love, you know, I mean, there's so much in what you're saying, but one of the things is, don't let life happen to you. Happen to life. Become intentional. You know?
Absolutely.
So what would you say is the question that we need to ask ourselves to start the process of intentionality?
What is my original intent? Why was I born a black person in the southern part of Africa, on the east of Johannesburg? Why am I there?
Right.
And my thinking is, and my truth is, every one of us has a problem to solve.
Yes.
We have what I call a celestial appointment. We've been given this appointment before our birth. Now we've been borrowed a tent that we're wearing with an identity to solve the problem.
And let's do something with it.
Find the problem and solve it.
Find the purpose. Who was it that said, you know, there are two most important days in your life is the day that you're born.
And the day you find out why.
And the day you find out why. Mm. And I think that's absolutely crucial. You know, Billy, what it brings to mind me too, because you started reading books. I mean, I'm sure those books were authored from people around the world. And that's the beauty of
Mostly American.
That's why you love New York so much.
That's why I'm a native of New York. I'm like, New York is my spiritual home.
The Big Apple. But you know, I grew up for a large part of my life in Botswana, a little place called Gaborone. I went to Maruapula.
Actually, people call it Gaborone. It's actually Gaborone.
Gaborone.
It means our place, our house, our place. Yeah.
That was my place for a while, you know.
Yeah, I loved it.
But it was really a village in those days. I won't even tell you how long ago it was. But I had a profound lesson there, you know, because I was always into physical exercise, and I could do 30 press-ups, and I was so proud of this. There was no one in my class who could do 30 press-ups.
Wow.
Then this guy came from Zimbabwe, and he could do 100 press-ups. 100.
What do they say? In the land of the blind, the one eye guy becomes the king until the one with two eyes shows up.
100%. And suddenly my 30 was nothing.
Compared to this guy.
Exactly. And I realized, you know, we need to benchmark ourselves not on the limited place in which we live. We need to benchmark ourselves on global standards.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, I started working towards that, and I got there. It took a while.
Yeah.
But my whole, you know, what I thought was excellent was not excellent.
Absolutely.
It was not.
And you know, it's exactly the same with my speaking career. And for the better part of the 20-something years that I've been speaking, I've been focusing on one thing and one thing only, understanding the science so that I can apply the art in a very powerful way.
Right.
And when I cracked the science, it was like, oh, my God, this is amazing.
Next level.
And when I started teaching it to people that have been in the game longer than me, who were doing the science unconsciously, and then I woke them up to the consciousness of how to do this thing, it's just like... amazing.
Yeah. Well, it reminds me of that saying that says, you know, some people say, I've got 30 years experience. And they say, actually, no, you've got 1 year experience 30 times over.
Absolutely.
And I mean, that's when you break through to the next level, when you push the limits. But Billy,
let's go back to that 30 years experience, because it could be an experience of doing something wrong.
Right.
So, you know, there was I like to be philosophical once in a while. There was this amazing philosopher who was also a martial artist. Mm-hmm. You know, the Chinese guy, his name was Li Junfan.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you know him.
No, don't.
You know him with his English name, Bruce Lee.
Oh, right.
His Chinese name is Li Junfan. So He said, I'm not afraid of a man who practices 10,000 kicks. Mm-hmm. I'm afraid of a man who practices one kick 10,000 times.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah. So become extremely good.
Exactly. You know, like be the tip of the spear.
Right, right.
Yeah. Amazing stuff. Yeah.
It is lovely. It is lovely. Mm. You know, one of the things we focus very much on in this podcast is how to be, firstly, how to be dangerous, but then how to be dangerous to whatever's a danger to society.
Yeah.
You know, when I think of you, Billy, the first thing that pops to my mind is you're dangerous to mediocrity. Dangerous to mediocrity.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, you and I have had this chat a long time. You know, how we need schools of excellence throughout South Africa. Yeah. You know, how government needs a school of excellence. Corporates need a school of excellence.
Absolutely.
You know, communities need school of excellence, you know, because we need to go beyond just the mediocre.
Yeah.
And one of the things I've discovered in life is that mediocrity loves company. Eh?
Yeah.
It loves company.
Yeah.
I mean, if you excel in a group of mediocre people, they don't like you because you're showing them up.
Absolutely.
You know, often the worst enemy to a recovering alcoholic is his friends.
Yeah.
Because they don't like the fact that he's actually breaking out of this. You know,
exactly.
Hey, come back and drink, you know.
Yeah.
And I mean, you've done that. I mean, you've done that amongst your peers. You know, you're starting this Global Speakers Academy, which I'm very excited we'll talk about that.
Yeah.
You know, teaching, just displaying the top talent in speaking in South Africa and the world.
The world, yeah.
But you are dangerous to mediocrity.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, it started a long time ago as a kid, because I'd always believed, I would always believe whatever that I set my foot on or at, I needed to be good.
Right.
Not just to be one of the people, you know. I trained martial arts, you know, for a better part of my life. And I was I was good at it because everywhere I went, I said to myself, if you get given an opportunity, do two things very quickly. Check if it's within your space that you love to do.
Right.
And if it is, go in and immerse yourself.
Right.
If it's not, walk away. Most people don't walk away in things they know they're not good at.
They
get in there and they dabble. Mm-hmm. You know, they dabble. And they just become dabblers. And they become dabblers for ages.
Right.
And these dabblers become gatekeepers for those that can deliver excellence. You know, I do a lot of work consulting for government and stuff like that. And you hear people complaining, oh, my manager this, oh, my manager, and they'll go on and on. Then at the end, I'll say, okay, so when are you resigning? Mm-hmm. Oh, and then suddenly, no, why? I'm saying, but I've listened to you talk about how bad this place is.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not resigning, I can promise you, you are the principal of the school of bad. You know, you're the principal
of the
school of mediocrity.
Right,
because you're not solving the problem, but you're talking about the problem.
Yeah, yeah.
So I've always said, whatever you do, deep dive.
Right.
Spend hours, you know, and you know, a lot of upcoming young speakers. And I say to them, man, you're not spending time doing, you're just thinking that you're going to be good in 6 months.
Yes.
It's 22, 23 years down the line.
Right.
I'm still a student of this game.
Yeah.
You know, I still go to conferences and meet mentors and coaches because you can never be good enough.
But I love that in you. You know, you reach a level. You know, who wrote the book From Good to Great? You know,
Jim Collins. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Yeah. Good is the enemy of great. You know, you're good, and you think I'm good enough, and you look around at your brothers and your immediate circles. And you know, you know, compared to them, I'm okay.
Yeah.
But are you comparing yourself to the best in the world?
Exactly.
Are you pushing the envelope?
Exactly.
You know, I love what you know. What's happening to the rugby team now? You know, they won two World Cups in a row. But they're innovating now. They're doing different things and new things because what works today is not.
It's not going to guarantee that it's going to work tomorrow.
It's going to work tomorrow. Yeah. But let's talk about, you know, life. What are the keys to becoming excellent? You know, you said that immerse yourself, be intentional, walk away from things that you're not going to be good at. But, you know, in terms of living an excellent life, what are some of the keys for you?
Well, for me, it goes back to the blueprint, Craig. You know,
have a blueprint.
And have a blueprint, and because without a blueprint, you can't make it happen. You know, and we all have gone through stages in our lives. You know, one of the biggest things that I've lost was my family.
Right, right.
My family completely disintegrated. And I sat back and I asked the question, I didn't want to blame. I said, what did I do wrong?
Mm.
You know, and I realized that I did not spend enough time blueprinting my family like I did blueprinting my business and blueprinting my speaking, you know.
There was an imbalance there.
There was a massive imbalance, you know. And now I'm saying, okay, I'm going to go for the second dance in my life of rebuilding a family.
Right.
Now I am being super intentional about it.
Fantastic.
You know, what kind of person must be part of my life?
Right.
What values must guide our relationship? How would you deal with conflict? How do you communicate?
Yes.
You know. It's going to go even as far as doing assessments, personality profiling, you know, wealth profiling. What is your profile? What is your money psychology? Yeah. All of those things, because once I become intentional about that, I will get exactly what I expected.
Well, you know what you want.
Yes.
And then you work out how to get what you want.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So for me, it goes back to blueprinting. And each time I show people the blueprint, they say, oh my God. Because for me, many, many years ago, I met this guy. He was selling a product called Success Motivation. Mm-hmm. It was an amazing product. It cost a lot of money. I didn't have the money. And I said to this guy, my man, I don't have the money, but I need this stuff. Mm-hmm. So let's work a deal. Mm-hmm. I'm going to try and get you referrals. And whoever buys from my referrals, mm-hmm. then I pay. And this was written by a guy called Paul S.J. Mm-hmm. Mayer, one of the most amazing personal master teachers in the world. And he had studied successful men and women. And had realized that a lot of them were successful financially, but the rest of their lives were falling apart.
Right. Totally embarrassed.
Divorced three times, yeah, yeah. Be going to court, unhealthy. Kids are on drugs.
Yeah.
And by the way, it's still happening now. You know, I don't want to be calling people names, yeah. but we see a lot of people that are becoming successful one-dimensional. Yes. They're becoming financially successful and everything else around their life falls apart. Now, Paul J. Mayer said our lives are divided into six dynamics. Mm-hmm. And he says until you are intentional about these six, you can never find balance.
Right.
So the first one he says, we come from a family and we're trying to build ourselves a home. Mm-hmm. So he says family and home is the first dimension. The second one he says your mental aptitude and your education is the second dimension. Mm-hmm. And he said the third dimension, so he says one affects the other. So
right.
you come from a stable family, you're mm-hmm. then going to be able to create an educational environment
right.
for yourself to grow. And as you grow educationally, you're able to affect your career and your finances. Mm-hmm. And then it says from career and finances, it goes to health and wellness. Mm-hmm. From health and wellness, it goes to social and recreational. Mm-hmm. From social and recreational, it goes to spiritual and ethical. Mm-hmm. And it says the first thing that you need to do, you've got to do a SWOT analysis of mm-hmm. all the six. Mm-hmm. Where are you? One to 10.
Right.
As far as your family, 1 to 10, educational, 1 to 10. And once you do that diagnostic, mm-hmm. let me tell you, many people that have gone through my mm-hmm. program, it's called personal navigation. Mm-hmm. When we get to the SWOT analysis, you can see people cringing.
Right, sweating.
Yes, yeah. Because you have to face your truth.
Right, right.
You know, you can lie to me as
I'm
money.
I'm making money, but my wife is dreadfully in a bad place. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm making money, but I hardly see my kids.
Right.
I mean,
remember
that story about this kid who asked his dad one day how much you make?
Yes.
And he went and raised money. One day he came and says, Dad, here's, I'm paying you to spend time with me.
Yeah.
That's the danger of society. And unfortunately, if you look at our society in the South African context, this insatiable hunger for material things
right.
is destroying the fabric of our society.
It destroys morality, destroys families. Yeah.
I mean, on my way here, I was listening to the VBS scandal being... it's crazy what these guys were doing. 1.9 billion in 2 years.
Looted
politicians.
Robbing from pensioners, huh?
Oh man,
it's disgusting.
And what did that money go to? Alcohol,
Maseratis.
Maseratis, Gucci, Louis Vuitton, whatever, you know. And that's where the challenge is. Until you create a blueprint that talks about your life holistically, you'll always be one-dimensional.
Right.
Soccer players. We've got soccer players that have become so successful in soccer, but everything else in their lives falls apart.
Yeah.
Musicians who've sung the most amazing songs.
Yes.
So for me, going through the blueprint, and I say to people, how do you get to Durban if you're not prepared to get there? So once you create this diagnostic and say, okay, this is where I am, then you then say, how do I get to where I want to go?
Right.
You're not going to get into perfection, but you're going to get into a place where you now, your life is much more solid and much more relaxed. You're no longer chasing. Mm-hmm. Because once you get into that place of balance, you're no longer chasing. You become like a magnet. You attract. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, success loves organization.
Right. So you have a plan. Once you've got the blueprint, the next thing is a plan.
It's a plan.
Plan of action.
Exactly. Yeah. And by the way, my blueprint, Craig, it's 100 years, 50 years, 25 years, 10 years and 5 years. That's my blueprint.
Right, right.
You know what I'm trying to say? Yeah. And everything that I'm doing here has to be impactful in the next 100 years. How are people going to know that I've been here in the next 100 years?
Yeah.
Because of the things that I do each and every day. The academy that I'm building, it's going to be around
long after I've gone,
you know, and once we can teach our people to think in that way, it's amazing how we'll be able to build a society that's not only self-reliant, but a society that also cares deeply for each other's success.
You know. What's that beautiful statement says, what you do now echoes through eternity.
Absolutely.
You know, and I think that's so important. So many people grow up and they don't have a strong belief that their life matters, that they count, that they're valuable.
Yeah.
I love what you said. You know, each one of us is absolutely and utterly unique and has a specific purpose in life.
Yeah.
You know? Mm. So what would you say to listeners here in terms of just affirming them that their life matters, that they count, that no matter what the humbleness of their beginnings, they matter, their life counts.
It important. Goes back, you know, that question must be answered by conception.
Yes.
You know, a million spams run crazy and
competing
for one egg. Million.
Yeah.
And one of them has now become you.
Right, right.
That in itself should give you the confidence to know that you're special, man. Mm. Like, there's nobody like you. Like, there's never going to be. Even twins that were born a couple of minutes or seconds apart, their DNA is not the same.
And you know, just to interrupt you briefly, I've read recently a scientific report that says the egg actually has a role in selecting the sperm.
Mm.
You must read that. It's fascinating, you know. So wow. It's not just the sperm that gets there, but it's the egg that actually attracts the right kind of sperm.
Wow.
So that union is a divine one, isn't it?
Amazing, yeah, man. Yeah. That's really amazing. Wow, I need to get to that. And that's exactly that.
Right, right.
So not only did the sperm run to go into the egg, but the egg chose the best of the breed.
Right.
It looked at all of them and says, this, if I make manifest this kind of person.
Which is you and me. The best
which is me and you, the best
and,
of breed.
And everyone else listening.
And everybody else, you know, and when we're going to make it happen. And and that's it. I think it must come from a place of love. And, you know, a lot of people suffer and they don't really get to become who they are because they've never experienced the warmth of love.
Too many. I mean, kids growing up in South Africa now, sibling-led households, orphan households, absent fathers, it's rampant. How do we combat that?
Well, I think it takes a village to raise a child.
Yeah.
I think we should go back and be practical about it. And I usually say to people, I'm not saying you've got to fill F&B Stadium and help people. I'm saying within your circle, within five houses of where you come from, whose lives are you impacting?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because if you go to an orphanage today and bring them four loaves of bread, when you leave, there are four loaves of bread richer than before you got there.
Right.
And that's where I say to people, you've got to start at the small little things because it's not the big things, Craig. It's the small things that makes impact.
Day by day.
I mean, acts of compassion. And the essence of Africa, we are a very deeply compassionate people. You know, and
Ubuntu is based on compassion.
It's based on compassion, and unfortunately, we lose it because we're chasing this vanity. Mm-hmm. You know, we're chasing big cars, we're chasing big houses, whatever. Mm-hmm. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with those things. Mm-hmm. It is how you get those things. It's how you get to them. Because if your life is just defined by chasing those things, you'll realize that one day the Rolls Royce that you bought is just a car.
It's just a car.
You know, the Louis Vuitton jacket you're wearing, it's just a jacket.
Doesn't make you who you are.
I mean, the expensive alcohol that you drink, it's just alcohol.
Absolutely.
You know, and we, if we can teach our people the essence of humanity, which is inside of us, but we've killed it because of this insatiable hunger for frivolous things, for vanity, literally for vanity.
Yeah.
And you know, like, Craig, I'm not dissing people. I'm not saying don't drive a nice car that you, I'm not saying that, but I'm saying don't let it be the end.
Well, don't place your value as a human being in that. You know, Billy, I mean, that applies across the board. You know, my kids went to St. Stithian's School, which is a very good school, private school. There were some very wealthy parents there. I remember once fetching my son there, and my car was in for service, and I had borrowed this beaten-up old Mazda 323. Remember those Mazda 323? It was a green one. Remember the green
one? Yeah, the green one. We used to call them a Dombolo in the township.
I was driving this beaten-up into this campus. I saw these Range Rovers, Mercs, you know. And, you know, Billy, to my shame, man, I saw this. I turned off and I waited until all these guys are gone. And then it was a real aha moment to me because I realized, you know, I'm valuing myself in the eyes of other people by the car that I drive, not by the man I am, not by who I am. You know, and the concept is if I lose everything, do I lose my value, my name, who I am? You know, so those become idols, don't they? Yeah. They become idols because our value isn't that. If I cannot drive that car, have that beautiful woman, have my kids at that school, then I'm less of a man. Mm. And it's such a lie, isn't it?
It is the biggest lie that has ever been pulled in the face of humanity. And people buy this lie.
Yeah.
And going back to your 30 push-ups and the guy who comes and does 100. So when you live in a world of smallness and then you get into the world of bigness, then you realize, oh, my God, there are massive things in life that people have who don't look at them the way that you look at them.
Yes.
Give an example. I'm in the U.S. I'm doing work, and I will not mention names because, you know, confidentiality. And then this guy says, oh, I see you in the U.S. I say, yes. So what's your schedule? I'm going to be doing this, doing this. He says, okay, you know, come hang out with me when you're done. I said, no, that's fine. Now I'm thinking, okay, I need to buy a plane ticket, blah, blah, blah. As I'm thinking it, he sends me an email that says, I will sort your transport out. Just that word in an email. So the day comes and I check my email. You know, there's no
ticket.
There's no ticket. How am I going to go to this guy? I go down to the concierge. I ask, is there somebody dropped an envelope? They said, no, nobody dropped an envelope, but there's a car that is waiting for you outside. You know, these big Escalade forts. Oh, I say, very cool. So I get, hi, gives me a coffee. I get into the back of the car. We go. But we don't go to JFK. We go to a different direction. So I'm thinking, are we going to drive that far? Because it's New York and it's North Carolina where I'm going.
Right.
I'm thinking, oh my God, this is crazy. And then there we are, we go to a private airport. And there's a jet, Citation. Mm-hmm. That's when I fell in love with Citation. There's a Citation waiting for me. Came to pick me up.
Wow. In his jet.
He sent a jet to pick me up. Mm-hmm. And you get into this jet and you think you're waiting for other people. This guy comes, hi, thank you very much. Welcome. What can I give you to drink? Whatever. And then he pulls the door. He closes the door.
Just for you.
Please buckle up. Mm-hmm. And I'm alone and I'm thinking, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
And that's it. This guy lives in such a massive life.
Right.
And for him to help a buddy, send a jet and say, let's hang out for the day, it's nothing.
Right.
So we've got to get into a place in our lives where we don't define our lives based on these things.
Right.
Because ultimately they're things.
They're things. Now that guy could have been the worst scoundrel in the world. His money didn't make him a good man. You can get a poor guy on the street who's got nothing, who could be an incredible human being adding tremendous value.
Absolutely.
And I think that's the point you make. Billy, I'd love to go, you know, you talked about this balance, you know, the six aspects. You know, you're not a success if you've got lots of money, but your kids are desperate and lonely. You're not a success if you're a top politician, but your family's falling apart or your health is falling. At the core of that, though, is a value system, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is values. And you talked about that, love and compassion.
Yeah.
I mean, how important are values to us as human beings?
You see, when I work with organizations around values, I say values are principles that guide your behavior, especially when nobody's watching you. You know, when nobody's watching you,
yes.
How are you going to behave?
Right.
If you're faced with this, you know, you're doing this deal and somebody comes and says, hey, you know, can you give me $1 million? I'm going to get you this $10 billion deal. Mm-hmm. What do you do?
Yeah.
Your values are going to determine your behavior.
Yeah.
And that's it. And a lot of people get into trouble because they've got no compass, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I have a value system. The first, it's integrity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I try as
your
much
word
as
is
I
bond.
Can.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep.
If I say I'm going to see you at 10, I'm going to see you at 9:45. If I say I can't, you know. And if I've always said to people, be that person or that human being that always lives up to your value system.
Yes.
Because without your value system, you're like the wind, you know.
You're an empty shell.
You're an empty shell that the wind is going to blow in all kind of different directions.
So
and I think that's one of the things that we need to teach our kids.
Yeah.
You know, what are the things that we should be? You know, my son, I used to ask him, how was your day at school? Now I don't ask him, how's your day at school? I ask him, whose day did you make better at school?
I love that question. Please repeat that.
Yeah. I ask him, whose day did you make better at school? So now guess what? Every day when he goes to school, he looks and searches for opportunity where he can help.
That's amazing, Billy. I love that.
And when he tells me these stories, you can see his face.
Yeah.
Glows, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he's done something impactful.
It's better to give than receive. Huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because as you give, receiving becomes a reciprocity.
You can't outgive God. Like,
yeah.
You can't outgive God.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
So values at the core. The other thing I just wanted to touch on briefly is, you know, one of the biggest challenges we have in the world, in South Africa very much, is this issue of entitlement.
Yeah.
And it goes back to what you're saying about intentionality. Mm. And I'm waiting for something. You know, a lot of people's pension plan in the US is the lotto, you know. You know, they're hoping they're going to win and it's never going to happen.
If they win it in the next 2.5 to 3 years, they lose all of it. They become worse off than before they actually won the lottery.
Because there's no blueprint. There's no value system.
Mind over matter.
No,
yes.
Absolutely. So this issue of entitlement kills people, doesn't it? Because they become victims, you know.
Yeah.
They start blaming. They blame my circumstance, blame the government, blame my father, my past, whatever. You know, share with us and the listeners, how do you overcome a sense of entitlement? How dangerous is entitlement to us realizing our potential?
So, you know, South Africa is a very dichotomous country with a lot of very difficult issues. And then there's this massive political correctness thing that you can't say certain things, you can't say certain things, whatever. But I say whatever I need to say because it needs to be heard.
And it's authentic and it's real.
It's true. That's who I am. And, you know, I don't have to apologize to anybody. I think when you look at entitlement, it comes from a lot of different places. But I want to talk about systematic entitlement, where a system makes people entitled so that they can never become responsible for their lives, so that the system can control them.
Right. They become dependents.
On the system.
Yeah.
You know. Now, I'm a movie guy. I'm sure you know I'm a movie guy. I just love movies. And I always look at the intention of writing the movie and the hidden messages. Because a lot of movies have got the hidden messages. Mm-hmm. Now, when you talk about entitlement, it reminds me of the movie The Matrix. I was actually saying to a friend of mine, don't you think that The Matrix was a documentary that was hidden behind a Hollywood script? Mm-hmm. And he says, why? I said, I'm going to give an example, which is what I'm going to share now. Mm-hmm. When we talk about the system, you know, there's a part in The Matrix where Morpheus and Neo are walking, okay? And when they're walking, Neo is, you know, bopping and weaving, but Morpheus is walking straight. Mm-hmm. And Morpheus says to Neo, The Matrix is a system, Neo, mm-hmm. and that system is our enemy. When you're inside and you look around, what do you see? Doctors, nurses, teachers, competitors, the very minds of the people you're trying to change. But until we do, they're part of that system, mm-hmm. you know? And it says you have to be aware that these people are so inert, so hopelessly dependent on the system mm-hmm. that they'll fight to protect it.
And they'll never fight against it.
Even if they know the system is bad. Because yeah. the system, you know,
right,
and this conversation is so powerful, you know? Yeah. And as Morpheus speaks to Neo, Neo gets distracted by some woman. And then Morpheus says to him, were you listening to me, Neo, or were you looking at the woman in the red dress? He says, I was, and he says, look again. And suddenly there's a guy pointing a gun at him, and he says, freeze, the whole scene freezes up. And then Neo says to him, is this the Matrix? He says, no. This is another training program designed to teach you one thing. You're either one of us or one of them. Wow. And then he says, who are they? And he says, these are sentient programs. They can move in and out of any software, still hotwire to their system, which means anyone who have not changed is potentially an agent. He says, inside the Matrix, they're everyone and they are no one. He says, we have survived by hiding from them and by running from them. He says, they are the gatekeepers. They're holding all the keys and they're guarding all the doors. Sooner or later, somebody's going to have to fight them. Then it scares the living daylight out of him. He says, anyone who's fought an agent, every one of them has died. He says, I've seen an agent punch through a concrete wall. Men have emptied entire clips at them and hit nothing but air. And then he says, and yet their strength and their speed is still based in a world that is built on rules. And because of that, they will never be as strong or as fast as you can be.
Right.
And then Neo says to him, what are you trying to tell me, that I can dodge bullets? He says, no, Neo. What I'm trying to say is that when you are ready, you don't have to. Wow. So this conversation, yeah, exactly yeah. that. So the yeah. system creates, I mean, let's look at South Africa, RDP houses, free education, all these kind of things. So we struggle, we fight the system. And these guys, they realize, you know, these people, they're going to be clever and they're going to come after us. So let's make them dependent on us. Let's tell them we'll give them houses. Let's tell them we'll give them free this. Mm-hmm. And then they can vote for us.
Yeah.
And we can control them. Mm-hmm. And they're not independent. And guess what? Now our society mm-hmm. has become victims mm-hmm. of believing that they are owed something. So everybody wants somebody to come and do something for them.
Yeah. And it totally and utterly disempowers you as an individual.
No, it actually kills you. You are dead. You're no longer this beautiful individual. You're no longer that beautiful sperm that was accepted by this egg to manifest the greatness that God wanted you to become. You are now just a statistic in a system that just presses buttons and it makes you a voting fodder. You're not adding any value.
You're receiving. You're not adding. Yeah.
You know, and Craig, so I was teaching and talking to this group of kids in a church. And I said to them, you know, guys, you've got to wake up and do things for yourself. The Calvary is not coming.
Exactly.
You know, you are the Calvary. And I said, by the way, poverty is not an illness. Mm-hmm. You don't wake up and be sick and poor.
Yes.
Poverty, it's just your inability to become productive, to produce anything of value that can be exchanged for something of value. Yeah. And I said that, you know, and I said the saddest thing about Africa, Africans have a belief that they can pray or fast themselves out of poverty. Mm-hmm. It's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. Two things get out of poverty. Either you have a product to sell that somebody wants or a service to deliver that somebody wants. That gets out of poverty.
Yeah. Yeah.
And by the way, you cannot make excuses and make money at the same time.
Excuses kill you.
Excuses kill you. You give all your power away. I grew up and looked at my life when I was poor, it was cold, I didn't have shoes. At some point in time, I thought, my parents did. But one day I thought, hey, man, you know what? These guys have got their own issues. They're dealing with their own issues.
Yeah.
Let me give them a break.
Yeah. Let me not blame them.
And for me, the biggest awakening came through Michael Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
The song, Man in the Mirror.
Right.
I'm starting with a man in the mirror. I'm asking if he changes his ways. No message could have been any clearer. Yeah. If you want this world to become a better place, take a look at yourself and make the change.
It starts with me. I love that statement that says, maybe you are the leader that you've been waiting for.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, that's it, isn't it? You
exactly.
Know? Become that leader.
Exactly.
I think Morgan Freeman said, he says, become the man you wish your father was.
Yeah.
And then you'll never spend your whole life wishing you had a father.
Exactly.
Become that man.
Exactly. So there was an advert many years ago on TV. So this guy drives a nice Volvo and he parks. And then he has a conversation with this young man and... So this one says, no, that's my brother, you know, because he drives a fancy car. And this guy says to him, do you also wish to have a brother like this? He says, no, I want to be a brother like that.
I love that. No, I've heard that story. It's beautiful. You know, I'll go back and swing back to the question you posed to your son, you know.
Mm.
Don't ask, how was your day? Ask, what difference did you make to someone else's life? Did you make anyone else's day better?
Absolutely.
And I mean, that's what this dangerous but good is all about.
Yeah.
You know, how can we become dangerous to the danger and a force for good?
Yeah.
And it's about focusing on the other.
Yeah.
It's about focusing on what value can I add as opposed to what I can receive.
And also, one of the biggest mistakes that our generation has done, earlier on we were talking about my daughter who just turned 27 and you know what I wanted to do and what she must manifest. Mm-hmm. Our generation, Craig, we came from abject poverty. Some became doctors, engineers, whatever, started earning money, moved into the northern suburbs, started driving the fancy cars. And here's the big mistake that we did. We started buying our kids things we never had, but we did not teach our kids things we did not know.
Wow, powerful.
You know, and that's it. We're still not teaching our kids. You know, if financial literacy, I mean, who... You know, there's no subject at school called how to make money.
Mm.
There's no subject at school, university, called how to save money.
Yeah.
There isn't.
Yeah.
Why? Because the system wants you to become a slave.
Right. You know, there's a beautiful statement that says, you know, most parents make life difficult for their children by trying too hard to make it easy. And it's true. If you make it too easy for kids, they don't realize that money doesn't grow on trees.
Exactly.
It does require blood, sweat, and tears. Yeah. So, Billy, I'd love to hear from you. You know, we live in a country which has unbelievable potential, human resource potential, mineral resource. I mean, just phenomenal.
Mm.
And I think that the depth of most South Africans beats the rest of the world.
Oh, yeah.
The depth because of what we've had to be. I mean, just your story alone, we could spend hours talking about your story, what you've overcome, what you've dealt with. You know, we've got incredible diversity, which is beautiful. But we have incredible challenges against this nation. Mm. For me, one of them is mediocrity, the acceptance of mediocrity. Yeah. You know, I mean, I recently did a talk. I won't mention the name of the institution, a government institution, big one, well-known one, internationally well-known. And I arrived there, and the CEO who was going to open the conference was an hour and a half late, the CEO. When I arrived at the gate to this massive institution, the gate was broken. There were people milling around. I mean, it just was absolute, utter mediocrity. There was no excellence whatsoever. And, you know, mediocrity is a danger to our nature. You know, mediocrity in politicians, mediocrity in some of the cabinet ministers, mediocrity, you go to Home Affairs, just you know, speak to us about the incredible danger of mediocrity and what we need to do to overcome that.
You see, what we need to do, we need to consistently challenge mediocrity.
Right.
Unfortunately, in South Africa, we accept it.
Yeah.
We think, oh, it's okay. It's not okay.
No, it's not okay.
It's not okay for me to go to a place where I'm supposed to get service and I find people having a conversation and not worrying about me as if I'm coming to interfere with their lives. And then people say, no, because I'm black, blah, blah. No, it's not because you're black. It's because you're not doing what you're getting paid for.
Yeah.
You know, you woke up in the morning and said you're coming to work. Is this what you came to do? And if this is what you came to do, then I'm very sorry. You're going to have to go back home.
Right.
Let's get somebody else. And I think we're not challenging mediocrity enough in this country. And it goes back to leadership. Because every nation is reflective of the people that they choose. So if you look at this current new cabinet of the GNU, I'm very sorry. I'm going to say these things. Come on, guys.
Not impressed.
No, I mean, what is that? What is there to be impressed about, Craig? I mean, really, what is there to be impressed about? I mean, no, guys, come on, man. And I think as a nation, we've got to now start questioning this over-reliance on politicians.
Yeah.
30 years down the line, I'm not saying it has been a complete train smash. There are beautiful things that have happened, that have been done, that are not mostly spoken about because people are not good at telling their stories. But the bad outweighs the good.
Yeah.
You know what I'm trying to say? And all I'm saying is we can do better. We should do better. However, you should also blame the society. Again, it goes back to the system making the society entitled to the system such that they don't challenge the system.
Yes, because
if you challenge the system, you're seen as a reactionary person or as an anti-revolutionary.
Right.
You know, you, people that call you an anti-revolutionary, they're wearing expensive shoes, having stolen money from pensioners. So we everywhere we go, we should challenge mediocrity. And everywhere we go, where we see excellence, we should raise it up.
I love it. Yeah.
Because we need to create a balance between the two. Because you can't keep pointing a finger and not raising the good people. I mean, I'll give an example. I went into a filling station. And I, when I go to a filling station, Craig, I don't sit in my car. I stop and I get out and I greet the guy. And I say, how are you, my brother? Could you please fill up my thing? Fills it up. And I always, my son always teaches me, always have cash, Dad, always have cash. So I have cash to say, hey, buy some lunch and I'll do this thing. Now, a filling station not too far from where I stay. I get in there, I'm in a hurry, I say, guys, fill it in. I run into the bathroom. Then I go to the shop and I take water. As soon as I put the water on top of the counter, I realize, oh my God, I didn't take my wallet. So I'm thinking, how am I going to explain this? Guy wearing a suit, tie, and whatever. You know, then I think I'm pulling a fast one. I quickly run, put back the water, and I run. I say, whoa, whoa, whoa. And the guy's already starting to pour. And it's about 400 something. I said, whoa, whoa, wait. He says, well, I said, my chief, I forgot my wallet. So I'm going to need to get an Uber, go home, whatever, whatever. This guy says to me, man, I know you. You pour here, so how much petrol do you need? You can come back with the money.
Well, he trusted you.
He trusted me, you know, and not, no, but he did not trust me because he knew me. He trusted me because every time I come, I respect him and I honor
I love that.
What he does.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, and it reciprocates. It So even though we have to challenge mediocrity, people that are doing good, we must shout about them.
Yeah, 100%.
We don't do that enough.
No, we don't. We don't. You know, I, a doctor friend of mine said, a lady, she said when she was still at university and studying, she was on an internship at a hospital, and they did their first exam. And the question that counted for the most marks was this question: what is the name of the janitor that services your floor? I mean, she'd studied all this incredible medical stuff, and the question, and she didn't know, you know, and they were angry with the professor. But he said, you know what? The most important thing about you is how much you care. You know, they say people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care.
Exactly.
And it was an incredible lesson for her, you know. Know the little people and honor the little people because the little people are as worth as much as you are, you know.
Absolutely.
And honor them. You know, the janitor in your building, you know, how do you honor him? I invited the janitor in the building to my recent birthday celebration, and people were, what are you doing that? You know, because he's a human being, and you know, every day I arrive at the office, he's mopping it, he's cleaning
His current circumstances does not give a permanency and does not affect his future. This guy can become the CEO. I mean, there's a story of a guy who was a security guy, then he becomes a CEO.
Absolutely.
These stories happen over and over again. So as much as we challenge, we must always honor. The same thing happens to me with you know, my son always says, so we'd go past a building or get into it. And everybody greets me and says, Dad, how do so many people know you? And I say, they know me because I care.
You care. You honor them. You
honor them.
You look in their eyes. You give them
I look
time.
In their eyes
you
and I
presence.
Greet them. You know what I mean?
I
and I don't care how important you are. We all want to know that somebody
100%.
Cares for us.
And the reality is your car doesn't make you important. Your position doesn't. You know, our janitor in our building, he's a wonderful, wonderful man. Wonderful. You know, if he never rises above the station of janitor, he still remains a wonderful human being.
Yeah.
Equally valuable as what I am, you know.
Yeah.
I think Nelson Mandela modeled that too very much. You know, people who met him said, man, he really engaged with me. He looked me in the eyes. He shook my hands. He remembered my name. I mean, and I think that's such a crucial part of excellence. So, buddy, there's so much we can talk about.
But one of the things, Craig, when you talk about honoring people, you know, human beings, we're a very funny species. You know, during COVID and lockdown, I called COVID and lockdown the greatest equalizer. And why do I call it the greatest? Why did I call it the greatest equalizer? And I thought when we came out of it, would have risen our level of humanity, but we didn't. Because now you're no longer CEO, you are at your house.
Right.
Now your four exhaust cars that makes noise was no longer in the street, was in the garage. Your expensive Hugo Boss suits were in the wardrobe. Your black car that you always sign about couldn't take you anywhere. And what did we become? We became fathers and mothers, brothers and sisters, aunts and cousins.
Yeah.
All the titles were gone. All the frivolous things that we used to put ahead of us, they were gone. And I thought when we came out of that, our level of humanity, I actually even did a podcast called Return to Humanity. I said, now I'm excited we're going to return to humanity. But man, when the doors opened, it was like the zoo was open. Like, it was like, oh, I thought, oh my God.
Yeah,
I mean, I went to New York not long after the lockdown was ended. I thought, you know, New York has always been this vibrant culture, people engaging. It was mad. Everybody had headphones. Everybody was back in the rush. And I thought,
nothing changed.
Nothing changed.
We didn't learn.
We didn't learn. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, it is crazy.
What do they say? If you don't learn from something, it's bound to happen again.
History repeats itself.
Ah.
So, I mean, we're talking about love, aren't we? We're talking about love.
Love.
Love. Yeah. Love your neighbor. Yeah. Love. Love yourself.
You know that song, All You Need Is Love.
All you need is love.
Da, 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 da. All you need is love. Love is all you need. And by the way, love is not a noun, it's a verb. You 100%. Don't talk love, you do love.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know.
Billy, I mean, we could talk for hours and hours and
absolutely.
Hours. You know? But I mean, just to summarize, you know, mediocrity is an enemy of our nation.
Yeah.
It's an enemy of our humanity. It's an enemy of the future that we can build for ourselves.
Absolutely.
And we need to fight against mediocrity. We need to live with excellence.
Yeah.
We need to base our lives on a value system of love. We need to realize that we are uniquely designed for a unique purpose, and we need to have a blueprint for our lives. We need to realize that success doesn't come in just one area. It comes in every aspect of our lives.
Absolutely.
And we need to realize that every human being is of equal value, and we need to honor and value each human being and bring to them the value that we are. I love that question you ask your son, man. I think I encourage everyone listening, ask yourself that, ask your son that, ask your wife, your husband.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
Don't ask what, you know, who is an American president? Don't ask what your country can do for you.
Yeah,
ask what you can do,
yeah,
for
can do
for your country.
Yeah,
and I think, you know, how did you make this world a better place today? Yeah.
Absolutely. It's a very profound and deep question. What did you do today? You are rushing, huffing and puffing, but whose life has become better because today
Fantastic.
You woke up,
Fantastic.
You know, whose life have you touched? And
Fantastic.
And for me, you know, so when I travel, I always pick up, I love human behavior. I'm very curious. I'm like this curious kid. So most of the time when I'm traveling, I get upgraded, you know, because I travel one airline, miles and whatever you name it. But then one day I said, I'm going to ask this lady. And I said, you know, I was at the airport at Overtown, and I said to this lady, hi, how are you? Fine. And I said, you know, I want to ask you a question. And it might be a dangerous question. It might be stupid. But I'm just interested. You guys here, you are the guys that give people upgrades. She says, yes. And I say, what drives you? What is the decision point when you decide I'm going to upgrade that guy from business to first class? And he says, we give upgrades to people who come here and acknowledge us.
Wow.
And then she laughs and says, you're one of our favorites. And I said, oh my God, because it happens to me all the time. So I thought, let me be curious. And so I said, wow. And I said, why? He says, when you come here, you stand, you greet us. It's not an act.
It's
who you are.
It's real. Yeah.
It says it's authentic. It says you ask us. And sometimes our kids, and I come back, hey, how are kids doing? He says, oh, you told me your kid is doing. I remember this thing. And she says, you travel so much, how do you remember these things? I said, you know what? I want somebody to remember my story too.
Right.
So that's why I remember your story.
Okay.
Because your story is as important as my story is.
Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Isn't it? The golden rule.
No, actually, I don't believe in the golden rule.
Yeah, tell me.
I believe in the platinum rule.
Yeah?
The platinum rule says, do unto others as they would done unto them.
Okay. So see them, know what they want.
And see them in the way that they want to be seen.
Their love language.
Exactly.
I'm with you. Yeah, I'm with you. Yeah, you beautiful.
Know, yeah, so, so yeah, so, and I mean, when I got here and I parked, I dropped my phone and this guy came and he picked it up and I started having a conversation with him. So I made a joke about land and whatever.
Yeah.
So I said, oh my God, this place is amazing. He says, yeah. So I said, this looks like a village. And I said, who's the Nduna here? So, you know, so everywhere I go, I want humanity. I don't want titles, CEO,
like
CFO. I don't care. You know, I always work with government. People, when you meet them, they say, I'm the DG. I say, I don't care.
Yeah.
And people get offended. I say, no, I don't care what your title is.
Yeah.
Because if they fire your ass today, what are you going to be tomorrow?
Exactly.
When you meet
me
again tomorrow, you're going to tell me, oh, I'm the recently fired DDG. Nobody cares about that. I want to know your humanity. I want to know who you are. I want to know what makes you wake up in the morning. What makes your eyes sparkle?
Yeah.
I want to get to know that.
That's beautiful. You know that story about the woman who worked with two British prime ministers? Australia and Gladstone.
Yeah.
And she was being interviewed and she said, they asked her, you know, what was it like working with these great men? And she said, you know, when I worked for Disraeli, I felt like I was working with the most intelligent man in all of Great Britain. When I worked with Gladstone, I felt like I was the most intelligent woman in all of Great Britain.
Wow.
And that was the difference between the two. The one aggrandized himself.
Yeah.
The other one aggrandized her, made her feel great.
Exactly.
And I mean, that's what charisma is. Charisma is not about being loud, noisy.
Yeah.
Charisma is, how do you make people feel in your presence?
Absolutely. How do you connect with people and make them feel that they are seen?
Absolutely.
They are heard.
And valued.
And valued. You know what I'm trying to say? Yeah.
Beautiful. So excellence, man. Excellence is a danger to mediocrity. Yeah. Mediocrity is a danger to our future.
Yeah.
And we need to be dangerous to mediocrity by being excellent ourselves and the best we can be.
And it doesn't matter what role you play. Mm-hmm. Play it with so much passion and chutzpah because somebody's watching. You don't know who that person is watching.
100%.
Because that person who's watching might be your greatest future.
Yes.
But if you're mediocre, I come in, I'm thinking, you know. I mean, one of the things I do when I get to a restaurant, I always look at the attitude of the waiter coming to me.
Yes.
And I immediately change their title. It's a big thing that I do. Yeah. So they come and say, how are you? And I look at their smile and says, I say, listen, I don't want you to be my waiter. Mm-hmm. And they get shocked. I say, I want you to be my go-getter. I want you to get stuff for me, you know. And I want you to be excited. I want you to be passionate. Yeah. And at the end of it all, me and you are going to make a deal. And you're going to tell me how much valuable service and engagement you gave. So I was in Cape Town at the Piatto in Cape Town many, many years ago. So I had my management team when I was at ADT, I was the director at ADT. We had a management team. There was about 11 of us. We had drinks and we had food and whatever. And this guy was serving us. Man, I looked at this guy and said, if I can just have 10% of this guy's energy, I get on stage with that energy. I'll kill every stage. Yeah. This guy was passionate. He was like crazy. So when the bill came, I think the bill was 2,500. So I held the bill like this and I looked him straight in the eye. I said, my man, tell me, here's the bill. I said, how much do you think you deserve? Mm-hmm. This guy looked me straight in the eye, says, I deserve the exact amount of tip that bill is. I said, fine. Gave him 100%. And these guys were like, oh my God. I said, my man, the world will value you the way that you value yourself.
I say. Well, you're honoring excellence, aren't you?
Exactly.
You're valuing it.
I'm saying, if you're valued at this, I'm going to give it to you. Yeah. And that's it. And that's what we do. We've got to go there and honor people. I mean, the guys who wash my cars next to my apartment, when I park my car, they fight to wash it. Mm-hmm. Because it's a teaching moment for me and a learning moment, by the way. Mm. So I teach and I learn and ask them, so what do you do? Where you come from? Blah, blah, blah. So I said to him, if man was not an issue, what would you do? Mm. Ah, then you hear the most amazing stories. That's, you know, for me,
fantastic.
That's the juice of life.
And you're inspiring people to be their best. You know, one of the biggest tragedies for my life, it actually brings me to tears. You know, when you look at so many people now who are 25, 26, 27, and they were born free in a rural area, and they are geniuses. They had the potential to be a rocket scientist, a doctor, whatever the case. Mm. And they're unemployed or they're working in a garden. You know, it's a tragedy how many people have such enormous potential, but it never comes to fruition, partly because of the system, the education, et cetera. And we need to change that.
We need to
unlock the human potential we have in this nation.
But we also need to redefine education.
Yeah.
Because South Africa, we define education by piece of papers. Mm-hmm. Not by virtue of potential, virtue of the ability to deliver. Oh, what degree? You know, I mean, I had a company, I will not mention their name, send an email to my organization, say, okay, we wanted to come and facilitate a three-day strategic planning session. Somebody told us you're amazing, blah, blah, blah. Send them a quote and everything. They say, please send us your profile. I send them my profile. And then the email that comes back says, oh, we realize we didn't see anywhere that says you've got a degree. And you know what was my answer to them? And I said, you know what? The funny thing is, you're using Microsoft to send me this email. And the person that designed Microsoft doesn't have a degree. Why should I have a degree to do this? If somebody told you I was good at it. And they never answered me for like 2 days. And I thought they were gone. In 3 days' time, they came and says, okay, Mr. Selkian, we've accepted your quote. These are the days and whatever. And I mean, people are so obsessed with peace. I don't have the piece of papers, unfortunately, but I kick ass. Every space that God gives me to work at, I immerse myself in that. I learn as much as I can, and I deliver excellence all the time.
Give your absolute best.
I say to people, treat every day like your last day.
Fantastic. Yeah.
Like tomorrow, you're gonna be gone. How are we going to remember you?
I love it.
You know,
Billy. Final word, man, for our listeners. I mean, you've given so much incredible value, and we could talk for hours. But final word, you know.
Final word is, this country needs men and women to wake up to the true essence of who they have to become. We cannot anymore as a country afford to accept low standards.
Mediocrity.
We have to raise our vibration and raise our consciousness. And once we do that, we'll create a vibration because we are energy. And the same energy we give into the world, it comes back to us reciprocally. Yeah. So this mediocre that we see running around is because we are allowing it to grow and to fester. But if we start changing our own personal standards and say, my standards personally are going to change, you'll then be able to affect and affect those around you in a positive way. And I think there is no time like this time.
100%. Exciting times to live.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much, brother. Just a final word, man. Yeah. There you have it. I mean, I couldn't have put it better. You have the power to change the world, the power to build the future, the power to have a positive impact on this world. And you can do that every single day. And I just want to thank Billy, brother, mentor, What a match.
A pleasure. Always
and,
a pleasure.
Go out there, be your absolute best, be a danger to mediocrity, and be a force for good. See you next time.